Welcome to the Market Meter Podcast. For this episode, we're going to be pretty much taking stock of what's been going on with global markets throughout this year. I can say it's been a bloodbath in markets this year across asset classes, and we'll be covering that. And also locally, I think we've seen a replication of what's been going on in global markets. And we'll be getting more into that. I'm joined by Rikard and Balu. I don't know how your weeks were. Maybe you can, you know, say hi to our, you know, listeners before we start.
Hello, guys. This is Rikard here, and I'm really humbled and happy to be here today.
Hello, Balu here. I'm very happy to join you today. Thank you.
Awesome. As I said, there's been a lot going on in the markets this year, and I think just to give our listeners an idea of, you know, the kind of performance you've been seeing. So starting off in US markets, I think they're the largest markets in the world, the most liquid. And it always makes sense to, you know, keep up with what's going on in the US, because most often than not, what happens in all these major economies usually echoes in our own markets. And so looking at US markets this year, the S&P 500, which is just 500 of the largest companies in the US. The S&P is down like 14% so far this year. And by the way, it fell as low as 19% like 2 weeks ago, and then it recovered a bit. The Nasdaq 100, it's mainly made up of tech companies, and it's down about 23.9%. It was down way more than that. I think it got like 29%, but it was also recovered briefly. We've seen a small bounce, but I will not start celebrating quite yet. The Dow Jones is down, you know, has fallen like 10% so far this year. Looking at Europe, the Euro Stoxx 600, which is just an index of 600 European companies that has been created, and the Euro Stoxx is down around 10%. Looking at Asia, the CSI 300 is just of the top 300 stocks listed in China, mainly on the Shanghai Stock Exchange and Shenzhen Stock Exchange. And the CSI 300 has fallen like 16%. Looking at local markets, if you look at our very own NSE All-Share Index, which is just an index that shows the, you know, aggregate performance of all stocks listed at the NSE, and it's down about 22%, you know, so 22.26% so far this year. So I think it's fair to say, yeah, that global markets have been selling off, and we've seen the same happening locally. And, you know, markets tend to be forward-looking and reactive to different conditions and different things that are happening. And so for this episode, we want to just break down, you know, some of the reasons why we've been seeing, you know, widespread sell-off in markets globally, and what you can expect going forward. You can start off with the elephant in the room. I think the one that, even if you don't keep up with markets, you probably, you know, have heard of, or at least know that it's going on. The, you know, Russia-Ukraine conflict, or the call it a war at this point. And so, just to give a brief summary of, you know, what's been going on, you know, Russia invaded Ukraine, and you know, Putin had, you know, massive ambitions, like, you know, in 100 days of already, you know, taken over, but it wasn't as easy as he thought. Zelensky put up a fight, and he was getting a lot of support from the US at the beginning, and then now Europe has joined. You know, they had other interests. We're going to get into that shortly. So let's just start off with Balu. Maybe you can give us your thoughts on this war, what you know, what's been happening, and just bring our listeners up to date with, you know, the status of the war between Russia and Ukraine.
This war's been going on for a while, but I think this war, what has brought is, I think it has lowered the consumer confidence all over the world. I think consumer confidence is low. According to me, I think consumer confidence is one of my leading indicators that I use to measure the way the economy is going forward. But when I look at the way people are complaining, things are, I know everybody's blaming the fight between Russia and Ukraine. Everything is now it's very expensive, but it has lowered consumer confidence, which is, I think it is affecting the economy.
Well, to pick up from where Mbalu has left it, if you look at consumer confidence on from a US perspective, you see that the money they received in form of check payments as a stimulus program, most of the money has already been spent. So it also caused some supply constraints all over the world, whereby there was shortage of wheat globally and shortage of oil. Also, Russia being banned from exporting their oil to countries all over the world. So you see countries like Egypt, for the first time, they imported wheat from India. Now with India, they saw an opportunity to make a killing for meat so they can have more money. But it ended up biting them back, whereby now they've banned exports of wheat from their own country because they're only left now with what they have can consume as a country locally. Mm-hmm. So this puts more pressure, prices, and the ongoing inflation that is being experienced globally. And it has exposed a lot of geopolitical factors, more so political risks, whereby you find countries, more so in the Asia space, they are unable to pay their debts externally.
Because Sri Lanka.
Sri Lanka, Nepal, Pakistan. Mm. So you find that they are now going back to look for more sources of financing from the IMF. But you find again, the IMF usually have very strict conditions if you want their funds. And when they turn back to China, you find that China now is no longer lending them money because their debt payments, most of them are going to China. And they're already close to defaulting paying China. So it makes no sense why they should give them more money again, yet they're defaulting on their already agreed obligations. So consumers globally are going to feel a pinch also from the raise of interest rates, and the more pain is yet to come.
I think one of the main after effects of that, you know, Russia invading Ukraine, I think it's, I agree it's on crude oil prices because, you know, Russia contributes, it's like the third largest crude oil producer, only after Saudi Arabia and the US. And so I think they contributed like just above 10% of the global supply. And when you have one of the largest crude oil producers being sanctioned and they can no longer trade with certain countries, or they have, you know, some of the assets getting frozen and all that, that was eventually going to affect global, you know, crude oil prices, because when supply contracts, one of the biggest suppliers gets taken offline. Okay, I can't say they're offline because they're still selling to China and India, but cutting off Russian supply from the global crude oil supply was definitely going to affect everyone globally, and I think that's what you're already seeing. Even locally, you've been seeing EPRA, you know, adjusting crude oil prices higher almost every month, and it came at the worst time possible because they were not even paying all these local oil marketers. They're not paying the subsidies. The government had allocated, you know, funds so that they could oil marketers who sell, you know, like oil, petroleum products locally could be compensated for selling at a lower price to shield the consumer. But you found even this subsidy was not being, you know, was depleted, or the money was allocated somewhere else, and we've seen, you know, crude oil prices rising, and this is as a record adventure. I think the local global consumer is just getting a pinch everywhere around the world. For me, I think the funniest thing we've seen about this crude oil rally is, you know, the shortage we've seen in Nigeria. Nigeria is also an oil producer, but it has just its own. That's a whole other topic. I think we'll have a whole episode just talking about Nigeria and, you know, how most African, the so-called petro countries, these countries that produce crude oil, are not as prosperous as, let's say, oil producers in the Middle East, which I think is completely insane. And it just shows how poor some of the stewardship or leadership we have in most African countries that could be very could be considered one of the wealthiest countries in the world, honestly. Yeah, crude oil has been huge, and also the food shortage. I think wheat, Ukraine and Russia do export wheat, if I'm not wrong, and you've seen the likes of Egypt getting hit hard. Because for some of these Arab countries, wheat is almost a staple food because they eat a lot of bread. And I think for us, you're a bit different because you're more reliant on our staple food is not necessarily wheat products, and not our staple food, although people do eat a lot of it. So the Russia-Ukraine, you know, conflict has not only been about energy prices, it has affected food security, it's affected a lot of things globally, and it's definitely one of the reasons that we've seen the market routes that you've seen. Because, by the way, the crude oil prices rising also show up in inflation. The headline inflation usually includes energy prices and food prices. Part of the energy prices is crude oil. So we've seen, you know, US inflation, the highest in 40 years. Local inflation has also been rising, as in it's a global phenomenon now, even across Europe. And this is largely also because of the crude oil, the prices that have been rising because of Russian supply getting cut off from the world. Yeah, I can say that's been one of the biggest causes of the recent market drought we've seen. Moving on, let's because inflation is tied to the Russia-Ukraine tension. Maybe you can pick up on inflation and what you've been seeing, you know, global central banks now trying to fight that inflation by raising interest rates. So, Rekhan, maybe you can give us an overview of what you've been, how different central banks have been reacting to, you know, rising inflation.
Well, if we could start off with the United States, then we'll finish up with Kenya. Fed has been steadily raising rates, and they usually give an indication to see how the markets will react to their statements and their minutes, so that they don't end up raising things aggressively, then it ends up dampening the economy further.
Mm-hmm.
But we see from this sudden prices going down, you find that it's caused by the Fed also decreasing the value of its balance sheets. And during the COVID crisis, you find that banks had mostly bought most of the bonds because they had the excess capital in their books. So you find that now they're no longer buying bonds. That's why you see also a fall in the bond market as well, in terms of also dumping all those cash flows that are there. But on rising rates, you find that the discount rate, which is used to find a view on prices based on future cash flows of a company, you find that the raising of the rates causes also the pricing of stocks going down globally. So the same case, if you use the same schematic, you can also get the same view in terms of the European economy. But for the Eurozone, in terms of the ECB's policies, you find it's a bit difficult because you find that all those countries, yes, they're one in Europe, but they don't have the same challenges, political interferences.
Mm-hmm.
Also what they export in terms of gaining their foreign currencies, they're so different. So you might find a country like Germany might be overheating and they need interest rates to be rising, but still you find a country like Portugal or Italy that they cannot handle an increase in rates. So you find that ECB is really mostly on a tight spot. I think it would be best if you just disband the ECB once and for all and every country would be independent, which could also create more trading opportunities and volatility in the market, which is good for traders in that regard. So if you look at Kenya, you find that Patrick Njoroge raised the interest rates for the first time in a long time so they can be able to combat the growing inflation concerns in the country, which will mean that there will be less liquidity in the market and cost of borrowing will go high. I think right now the banks are loaning at around 13% per non-staff. But I think the staff rate is actually higher, lower actually than what they give to other clients. So you will find that getting money from the banks will be more expensive. There might be outcomes whereby the employment will go down because corporations will not be able to afford that kind of interest rate to be able to finance their capital needs and also with the growing concerns of the falling of the Kenya shilling. So those are my 2 cents on inflation.
In the case of Kenya, I find it very interesting because in March, inflation was like the official figure that Kenya National Bureau of Statistics released was 5.56%. And then for April, that jumped like nearly one percentage point to 6.47%. So that's a huge jump, first of all. And I think that's why we saw central bank, as Rikard had mentioned, that central bank raised interest rates for the first time since 2016, if I'm not wrong. They raised from 7% to 7.5%. Indeed, and this, but this, as you've just taken the recap of global markets, this is not isolated to Kenya. Yeah, and we've been seeing the same, you know, in the US. They've also raised interest rates now. The last meeting, they raised 0.5%, just as the CBK did. And inflation there is the highest in 40 years, right? It's what, 8.5%?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a global phenomenon, and part of the reason, of course, is the rising crude oil prices, and I think also partially also part of the reason we've had the high inflation is because of supply chain issues. And this one is not a new problem. It started, you know, during COVID, you had a lot of backup in terms of shipping. There was just a lot of snarl up in the global supply chain, and at the same time, you also had a bit of decoupling, as you know, some even with the Russia-Ukraine tension starting, and you know, a couple of companies had to change their supply routes, and it's been one hell of a mess. I remember even some time we had a ship that was a cargo ship that was stuck in the Suez Canal. You remember that one?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so inflation, I can't say it's anywhere near over. And it makes sense at this point to honestly brace yourself as a person out there, you know, be very conservative with your spending, because, you know, it could get worse. It could always get worse. And at the same time, also part of this inflation is because governments are printing money. That's the one thing your president so will never admit to you, but that's exactly what is happening. I think around 40% of the U.S. supply of money, dollars, was actually printed during the COVID period, just to show you how rapidly governments are increasing the supply of money. And unlike in the past when, you know, countries on the gold standard, our money is not backed by any actual, you know, asset or precious metal. So that means the more they print, the more its value falls. And that also ends up showing up in inflation, because you're basically losing purchasing power on a day-to-day basis. And I think that's even the more reason to be an investor, so that at least you get a yield or a return above inflation, so that you preserve, you know, your purchasing power and probably make a return on top of that. Without trailing off further, I think, Rikard, I have a question for you here. Do you trust the official inflation figure given by the Kenya National Bureau of Statistics? They're saying Kenya inflation is at 6.47% right now. Do you trust the official figure?
No. Actually, I don't trust any economic figure given by any country, because when things are good, they tend to overestimate for political reasons, and when things are bad, they tend to also make it a bit look like it's a soft landing, to say. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree 100%. I completely agree. And the another funny thing, you know, inflation is not this perfect measure. Like whatever the CPI says, that's inflation. If these figures are created by people at the end of the day, they can decide to change the weighting. They can decide to change, we don't want to use the CPI anymore, like the US did. Now they consider the personal consumption expenditure, the PCE and the core PCE. And so if the people who are meant to be measuring inflation can change what is included in the inflation measure, it means you can't even trust it, because they can change it to suit whatever end or need they have. And I think, honestly, this is my personal opinion. It's a bit of an unpopular opinion, but I think Kenyan inflation is it's in double figures. Like, you're way above the US. I think we have double digit inflation locally. It's way above the figure the government is giving you, 6.7%. And I'm sure the average Kenyan can tell this. Just look at the things you've been buying, everyday things, bread, unga, everyday things you've been buying over the past few years. Do you think over the past 12 months, prices have only risen 6%? Like, even just looking at bread alone, do you think it doesn't even make any sense whatsoever? And so I think the official figure is way higher than what the government is giving you. And so it really begs caution at this point. I think as a person, the best thing you can do in such a period, apart from, of course, investing and handing a return higher than the inflation rate, the other thing you can do is be very conservative, you know, with your spending, also tighten your belt. We're seeing a lot of companies, especially in the US now, they're starting to cut spending on their staff. Tesla announced the same. I saw even some crypto exchanges were freezing hiring. So it's possible that you might be headed for a recession. And people, during recessions, what tends to happen is you find there's literally a lot of demand destruction, first of all, and also companies tend to cut back on their costs and expenditure. And part of the biggest costs most companies have is their staff. And so ensure you have a nest egg of, you know, savings that you have up, let's say, around most financial advisors say 3 to 6 months of expenditure, money that you can spend, your personal money that you require to survive for the next 3 to 6 months, because you never know, there's a lot of uncertainty. And the best thing you can do is take caution during such a time. And I think tying to inflation again, we can talk on the topic of the Kenyan shilling. We had some drama in the past few days. The Kenya Association of Manufacturers came out and, you know, mentioned that none of their members can get trade, you know, foreign currency or the dollar against the shilling at the official rate. They say it's way higher than that, and that's the prices they're getting, and it's creating it's a parallel exchange rate, like the official exchange rate and another exchange rate that the people on the ground get. And I've been looking at, you know, some of this. Some of them, on average, you're getting above 119 buying on 20 selling, and that's a good rate. That's honestly a good, very good tight rate. For some of these banks, I saw in CBA, I think they're buying at around 110 and they're selling at around 120 the shilling. Look at that kind of, you're seeing some crazy spreads there. If you follow us on Twitter, you saw I mentioned that, and so the shilling is sliding also, and this is also another reason why I think we're getting the kind of the inflation we have right now. And to remember, most of our debt is in foreign currency, and so when some of this debt is due, you know, the government has to pay back in dollars, in hard currency, in whatever currency they borrowed. And every time they pay in dollars, it means we're losing foreign currency, we're losing our foreign currency reserves. And that's also part of the reason why the shilling has also been sliding. Apart from also, of course, the obvious reason that the dollar has been getting stronger just across the board, even against developed markets currencies like the euro and, you know, the Canadian dollar, the Australian dollar. The dollar has been gaining a lot of strength lately. It's also concerning because it means you're losing purchasing power. That's what it means. You see, the weaker the shilling gets against the dollar, the more you lose your purchasing power. As Kenya, we are a net importer nation, meaning we import more than we export. We have a trade deficit. We also have a current account deficit. It means that the weaker your currency gets, the more you have to spend to afford these goods and services that you import from abroad. The major one of them, of course, being crude oil. So, Rekha, on the issue of the shilling, maybe you can share your thoughts with us. And, you know, we saw Patrick Njoroge in a recent interview reacting to claims by the Kenya Association of Manufacturers that there's a parallel exchange rate and, you know, the shilling is on the slide of the shilling. So maybe you can enlighten us on this. Eh?
Yeah, for the Kenya shilling, I would say one, Patrick Njoroge's answer, I think, was the best answer, because for some position as a central banker, your job is actually to calm the markets, not create fear into the markets. So even if there's fire everywhere, your job is to make sure people think that actually it's summer and everything is just okay and cool.
Yeah.
So his response to me, I believe, is the best. because you see that he didn't scare away investors. So to me, given the, whatever the reality is, his answer is just okay. But if the market itself is showing that actually there's some sort of a lot of weakness in the Kenya shilling, because it's been sliding since 2020 back there till now, because it's depreciated a lot and a lot. So now you find that manufacturers actually, they get to buy the shilling at around 125 there, 120, because even if it's trading at 116, you see that banks also need to make a profit from the exchange market. So they also increase, put their markup on the whatever is currently being traded. So regardless of the shortage and all that, the more demand there is for the dollar, the more the shilling would also weaken in totality. What do you think, Tony?
Yeah, I completely agree. It's, you're in a very precarious position, honestly. Because on top of all that that's been going on, we have an election coming up in August. And typically during leading up to the election, we have capital flight. And you're already seeing that at the NSE. Just to give you context, now Safaricom is trading, you know, as low as what? Safaricom is trading at below 30 shillings. Just to give you an idea, our biggest, the most liquid stock on our exchange has sold off by that much. And that's likely because a lot of foreign investors who make up a majority of investors in our markets, a very sad reality, but it is the case. They're selling off their exposure to Kenyan companies, you know, leading up to the election. There's a lot of uncertainty. So on top of rising oil prices, supply chain constraints, and of course, those ones leading to higher inflation, we have the shilling is falling, and at the same time, we have an election coming up, so we're getting more capital flight. So I can't say the shilling has, we've seen the end of where the shilling might fall to. I don't want to give an estimate on here because I sadly don't have a crystal ball, but I'm convinced we have not seen the worst yet. Yeah, because at the same time, the only way to stop the slide in the shilling is to use reserves to defend the shilling. Let's say to just buy the shilling in international markets to sell off reserves. But at the same time, we're in dire need of those reserves. So I don't think the CBK will be stepping in anytime soon. And if they do, it won't be any major, it won't be a major, what's it called? Interference, or it won't be a, so I don't expect much in the way of the CBK stopping the slide in the shilling. And so we are headed for really uncertain times. And I think I saw, the reason when Elon Musk was mentioning that he's cutting 10% of the staff at Tesla, he said he's very unsure about the economy. He's very worried about the economy. I'm not saying Elon Musk is an economist or someone I'd listen to when it comes to such an opinion, but it's always good to take note of what industrialists are saying, people who are actually creating the jobs on the ground. And that's what it takes. It's not just about economics. It's not just about coming up with opinion. It's also about putting your ear to the ground. We're seeing a lot of multinational companies freezing hiring and all that. It's almost as if people are bracing for the worst. At the beginning of this episode, we talked about the consumer sentiment is falling. Consumers are also worried about the future of the economy and the ability to afford things. And I think that's also been mirrored when it comes to manufacturers' sentiment as far as the outlook for the economy. And when most of these companies that do create jobs are worried about, uncertain about the economy, they tend to start cutting back on staff, or they do other cost-cutting measures or investments. And so it ends up becoming almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You're worried, so worried about the economy slowing down that you end up actually causing the economy to slow down by, you know, cutting back on your expenditure, on your on forward guidance and all that. And so we are faced by a lot of uncertainty, and the election is coming up also. Maybe Rekha, you can give us your thoughts on, you know, how you see this playing out in terms of how it will affect, let's say, our markets, or, you know, do you think the shilling, do you have a price target for the shilling, unlike me, or what are your thoughts on this?
Well, my price target for the shilling will be to devalue till infinity. Because you see, the more it, at the current rate at which it continues to devalue, it makes our external debts more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to pay back the debt, we'll either have to print money or renegotiate or borrow more so we can pay the initial debt. So we are like in a debt cycle that's not ending anytime soon. And for the, in terms of the elections coming up, I think it's safe to say that there are only two major contenders who are going to win. This is my own personal view. I'd say that for Raila's sake, you'll see that the people he has promised, for them to support him, the amount of promises he has made going around, I think our budget will be extremely inflated coming soon.
Yeah. And our deficit will also grow.
Yeah. Our account deficits will just be in deficits all this time, because if they promised Kalonzo like a prime minister role, that means that after the election, there might be, if he wins, there might be referendums so they can introduce the prime minister role into the constitution.
Yeah, that's an expenditure again.
Exactly. So, and then the whole team, those guys paying them salaries, the security, the benefits, that wage bill money is going to be too crazy. And on the other hand, if somebody like Ruto, I think there have been a lot of fears of how he's gotten his wealth over the past years. So maybe with those speculation that if he does win and the trend continues, then we might see that we'll still be worse off. If, in my opinion, both of them. I don't think none of them is good.
I think the thing that we should be most concerned about is that none of them is preaching fiscal responsibility. No one is saying you're going to cut back spending, you're going to reduce our deficits, you're going to reduce our external debt. They're all saying, telling you different ways they're going to spend more. And by the way, for this vote, we're very analytical people. It's not feelings, it's not our politics leaning. We'll criticize all sides. As long as what you're saying makes economic sense, we'll agree. But if it doesn't, we'll tell you straight up. Both of them are selling, they're on the same side of the coin. They're selling you bigger deficits. And you know what that means? That means a weaker shilling. That means higher taxes. You're going to have to tighten your belt to pay for this debt, because as much as the expressway looks pretty, it costs such things cost a pretty penny also.
Yeah.
And so
Ruto has also been campaigning on the basis of giving people like mortgage loans so that they can be able to rent to own houses in Nairobi.
Mm-hmm.
So you start to wonder, where is all that money going to come from?
Yeah.
It begs that question. Because we are not...
Yeah, no one is talking about how we're going to raise this revenue, how they're going to maybe cut back on spending. They all just want to spend more and more and more. So whatever we've seen, I think, whatever we've seen, you know, happening under Uhuru, you know, a lot of fiscal spending, and we've seen, honestly, I can say it's been, I can call it reckless debt expansion. As of now, for every 100 shillings you pay, you pay in taxes, 60 of it, 60 shillings goes into servicing debt, paying interest on this debt.
Loan.
Yeah, and that's only going to get worse.
Yeah, so if you ask me where you see the Kenya shilling going to, I say it's going to devalue till infinity.
Yeah, Uhuru just gave us, the Uhuru administration just gave us a taste of the medicine, I think. Whichever administration, whoever is going to take on power, we're going to see our debt increasing by bounds. And that's by the way, it's not a uniquely Kenyan phenomenon, as we talked about. You know, some countries in the world, the likes of Venezuela, Sri Lanka, countries are defaulting all over the world. And it doesn't help. The dollar rising doesn't help also, because most of these countries, they borrow in dollars, they trade in dollars. And so if dollars are getting expensive, you can be sure that's going to affect our debt sustainability. And so a lot of frontier and emerging markets are definitely in very dangerous territory. And there's a Swahili saying that ukiona mwenzako ananyolewa, you know, kimochako kitie maji. We could be the next Sri Lanka. You don't know. I'm not saying it's coming, but I'm just saying we continue with this reckless spending, sooner or later it's going to come home to roost.
And IMF actually warned us against our debt plans and our fiscal policies. They actually warned us, and you find that in the media they don't talk about it. I'm like,
very
serious, because we were ranked together in the same group with the Sri Lanka kinds. So I'm wondering.
Hey, yo. Mm-hmm.
So if we're in the same category that the other countries were warned, and the waters succumb to those countries, it's so bad. So I just wonder where we're headed to.
Yeah, but there's a lot going on, and I think we have taken stock of the main issues that are causing the current economic and conditions, and also the recent market rout we have seen. And so I think it helps at this point to give you an idea of how you can go about it. I know we've been hinting throughout the episode, but like how can you now as an individual protect yourself from inflation, protect yourself from rising cost of living, and these different strategies you can put in place just in your personal finance to at least put yourself in the best possible position. You can start us off, and then Rekad can add on whatever he has on his end. As I said, the first thing I can say, it's about investing. And so we've talked about market selling off globally, and if maybe you're investing in the stock market, there's no way you're beating inflation, or at least there's no way you've beat inflation so far this year. Because as inflation has been rising, a lot of these stocks have been falling also. And so if your money was in public markets, you're definitely not making any interest. And so you have to look for alternative investments. And I think in this kind of environment, the best investments are pay you an assured return or cash flow on a regular basis. It can be fixed income investments, something like bonds. You've seen a couple of new issues the last couple of weeks. The good thing you get with bonds is that you get regular payment. It doesn't matter whether the economy is doing well or the economy is doing bad. As long as the government is still solvent and hasn't defaulted, you can be sure you receive your coupon payments if it's your 12 or 13%. So at this point, I think you want to look for such investments that pay a regular return. Same, I think, with money markets. Maybe if you know good SACO, you earn some dividends. A lot of people are borrowing right now. And by the way, as the economy slows down, a lot of people get to run out of the funds or the savings and start. So some of these investments might help you at least combat the rising inflation and preserve your purchasing power. Secondly, I think it's just about personal budgeting, ensuring that you cut off any unnecessary expenditure on things that, let's say, are not essential, things that you don't need, and only focusing on the essentials. And even if you're still making money now, as I said, if a recession comes up, some companies tend to cut back on spending on their staff, and people lose jobs, and you never know. You want to take as much precaution as you can. Have a nest egg, always have a nest egg, because it gives you a peace of mind, even if in the worst case scenario, at least you have this living expenses for a couple of months, even as you look for another, let's say, another gig or another place that you can be employed. So in investing in this, investments that pay regular return or an assured return, or at least a fixed return, and being very responsible with your budgeting and ensuring you're planning for the future and you're putting some money away to take care of yourself. Rekad, I don't know any measures you can advise our listeners as we end the episode on how they can protect themselves, at least in this kind of environment.
Well, I believe you've mentioned all of them, but just to add on, I'd say listeners should also try to get better or implement good tax saving means, whereby they don't have to pay a lot of taxes, find loopholes through the tax codes in order to be able to save more cents into your purse. And also let banks be the last means of getting credit. And this mobile app should be only used for emergency purposes only, because there are other cheaper ways of borrowing money through the SACOs, as you mentioned, and also the local groups as charmers, as you put it. So I believe those are the best ways for now to save up.
Yeah, so there's definitely a lot of uncertainty as far as our economy is concerned and the global economy is concerned. And it takes as an individual, you have to be really prudent in such times to ensure that you plan and you don't have, you know, these unexpected expenditures or end up in a time where you're very hard up, you have to dispose some of your assets in the worst case scenario. So if you wish to engage us more on this, you can definitely reach out to us on Twitter or on our personal accounts, and we're always willing to engage and, you know, answer your questions or anything that you'd like us to cover on how or any expert on any particular field you'd like us to have on the pod. We're always open to that. We have a bunch of stuff we're planning for the podcast, and I'm sure you guys will love it. We'll announce it as the time comes by, but I just thought I'd hint it, so when it happens, you'll be like, oh, that's what they're saying. Yeah, just to end the episode, I thought, you know, we'll definitely take stock of some crazy stuff has been going on in the crypto space. So there's an employee for, there's this NFTs, non-fungible tokens. There's an exchange, it's called OpenSea. There's this guy who was, he has just been prosecuted for insider trading. Normally, insider trading happens like in traditional markets, like the stock market. Let's say someone gets non-public information and they make money off of it before everyone else has gotten that information. We've seen that for the first time now happening in the crypto space, especially in the NFT space. Because what this guy was doing is he will buy NFTs before they're listed or before they go live on the exchange, and then sell it to someone else. Once they go live, they sell it to someone else at a higher price. So he's just making that like a spread in there, and he was actually prosecuted for that. Because ultimately, the crowd always loses. I was reading some research note from Goldman Sachs. They're saying most of retail investors who bought stocks in the last 2 years, basically people who started investing during COVID, have sold their stocks. I think this rings true to that Warren Buffett quote: the stock market is a tool for transferring money from the impatient to the patient. So all these guys just jumped in. They thought the stocks only go up. There's actually something common going around saying stocks only go up. So they bought in at a bull market. They thought they were kings. They thought they were geniuses. People made money. And now they've just literally given back all that money. Stocks have massively sold off. Most of these meme stocks are getting trashed. Although, you know, GameStop has been bouncing lately, or they've had, I think they approved like stock split. But generally, the crowd has been losing a lot, even in crypto. I think like over 40% of crypto investors are underwater, meaning that the prices now are lower than where they got in. So we're seeing a lot of craziness going on. Hope you guys are being safe out there. You're bracing yourselves for this, and you put some of these measures we have recommended into practice. Riker, any parting thoughts?
None for me. It's been awesome. A good episode.
Yeah, it's been a good one. I also enjoyed it. Maybe it's because you're markets, guys. We can go on forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's been a great episode. I'll be glad you were with us for this episode, be able to listen, and reach out to us if you have any questions or concerns. Other than that, have a great week.
Have a great week, guys. Be best.